You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, folks, that was not a very fun Friday evening. On that unfortunate note, wake up. It's Saturday. It's the day after. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. And well, now, the morning after, we're trying to basically dissect just how the Rockets again lost to the Spurs. The first time all season they've been held below 100 points in consecutive games. This time a 103-92 final in Game 3 at Toyota Center. That not only gives the Spurs a 2-1 lead in the best-of-seven series, but it gives the Spurs home court advantage back. It's now, essentially, they have a one-game lead, and they just got to win two of the next four, and two of the next four are in San Antonio. So it definitely makes Sunday's Game 4 essentially a must-win game for the Rockets. I know that gets thrown out a lot, and many times it's overstating it. But if the Rockets go down 3-1 in this series, boy, it's hard to see them coming back, because it's not like going down 3-1 in the Clippers series 2 years ago when you're just essentially one game off serve with regards to home court. You would have to win both a Game 5 and a Game 7 in San Antonio. That's an awful, awful lot to ask. And, well, the longer the series goes on, the less it feels, the more distant Game 1 seems to be in the memory. The Rockets aren't getting the quality of looks. They're not generating the offense. The pace has been slowed to a crawl. And all of that adds up to a game that, well, the Spurs are just much more comfortable playing in than the Rockets, and I think that's what we saw in stretches in Game 2, but especially in Game 3, the first without Tony Parker, and of course now the Spurs have a 2-1 lead in the best-of-seven series. So, breaking it down, how did this happen, and how do the Rockets get out of it? I know that's what everyone wants to discuss. The rebounding, that was the story in Game 2, 47-32. It was still not good for the Rockets in Game 3. They lost it 49-39, but it was a much improved effort, I thought, defensively. Clint Capella, in particular, was huge. 12 points, 16 boards, 5 blocks, 32 minutes. Clint Capella had 16 rebounds. He shot 6 of 9 from the field and had 5 blocks. Even had 3 assists, too, for good measure. Capella was a beast. He was a big part of how the Rockets were able to stay in the game within striking distance. They were within 3 very late in the third quarter. So it wasn't like Game 2 where you say, well, the Rockets were just bullied and couldn't hold their own in terms of the rim. No, the real story in this one, as it's been for a lot of the postseason, the Rockets just could not hit their threes. They were 12 of 39 overall. That's just over 30%. But really, that included a couple of makes in the last 2 minutes when the game was already out of reach. Really, the Rockets were in the 20s again. It was very reminiscent of the Oklahoma City series when they were just 28% from three for the series. But in that series, you had other guys besides James Harden capable of stepping up and handling the scoring load. Tonight, well, you didn't. Trevor Ariza hit 5 threes in the first half, but he missed all of them in the second. Started 5 of 9 from 3, ended 5 of 12. He was hot. That kept the Rockets in striking distance early. Harden really caught fire in the second half. Ended up scoring 43 points on 50% shooting. A crazy good game for him. 5 of 13 from 3, which relative to the way the rest of the Rockets shot is pretty damn good. But on the balance, the Rockets just did not have enough help from their supporting cast. Eric Gordon off the bench was 3 of 10 in his 33 minutes. Lou Williams played just 11 minutes and was 0 of 4. Nene played 15 and was 0 of 5. Ryan Anderson, home Ryan, returned. He was 0 of 4. And that's the real story for the Rockets here, is that the supporting cast just absolutely did not get it done. I should also throw in Pat Beverly, who was 3 of 13 and 1 of 5. And what's pretty clear here, the Spurs are adopting a strategy. They may not have the athletes, but they also have the length inside a little more than Oklahoma City had. The Spurs are adopting a very similar philosophy to what we saw Oklahoma City do in the first round, which is take away plan A, which is the ability of James Harden to facilitate and distribute. We saw in Game 1 he had 14 assists, and a lot of it the Rockets said after the game that, well, we got our looks, we just missed them. No, I don't really buy that. We'll get to why in a minute. But Harden had just 5 assists in his 40 minutes. I think that might actually be a season low for him. Even though he had 43 points, Harden was incredibly effective as a scorer, but what Popovich is doing, and to an extent the Thunder did this as well, was reduce his ability as a playmaker, as a facilitator. And what I mean by that they're not just letting Harden go one-on-one. Now, certainly Gasol's length around the rim, that was the adjustment the Spurs made before Game 2, putting Gasol in the middle. They're playing a ton of minutes now with Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge. Neither is known for their defense individually, but collectively, there is a lot of length, and that's at least contesting shots and giving the Rockets a few problems. But essentially what they're doing, they're helping 50%. Whoever is guarding Harden, be it Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, whoever it is, they're not really capable of guarding one-on-one, and the Spurs are willing to help, you know, 50%, I would say, hedge, show, whatever you want to call it, when necessary. But worst case, if that doesn't work and Harden still gets to the rim and he makes the shot, great, they're fine with that. What they're doing, they're helping, they're hedging just enough to still keep them in range of closing out on the shooter. So how do you overcome a defense that's in constant scramble mode like that? You know, basically half showing, trying to deny, stall. And by the way, a big part of this, the Spurs make it seem a little complex because they're trying to burn time off the clock. And so if things don't work out the first time, the Rockets too often find themselves too late in the shot clock to really reinitiate their offense for a second go-round, end up having to take a poor shot. And the real problem with this, and I have a feeling whether it's this series or next, is going to be the ultimate downfall for the Rockets this season, is the lack of a true secondary creator after James Harden, a consistent secondary creator. One of the narratives I saw after the game on Friday night was that, well, basically this series is the same as the Oklahoma City series, but the Spurs are just a better team, and whereas the Thunder weren't capable of punishing the Rockets for not shooting as well from three as they did all year, the Spurs are. Maybe to a small extent that's true, but I think the bigger difference is that in the Oklahoma City series, you had Lou Williams and Eric Gordon contributing at a legitimate level off the bench. Lou Williams in particular was enormous in that Oklahoma City series. He had three games of 20-plus points. Eric Gordon, he got going in that series, had a couple of 18-point games. Even Pat Beverley, remember in Game 1, that was the best the Rockets have looked. Well, maybe tied for the best they've looked. Both Game 1s have been great. But go back to that Oklahoma City Game 1, when he was arguably the best player on the floor offensively as well. One of the things that you guys probably get sick of me pointing out on Twitter a lot is when Beverley hits a mid-range shot, that's so big, that's what I'm talking about, because when teams play Harden in the manner in which the Thunder didn't run one, now how the Spurs are starting to in this series, you're not going to get, they can head show enough to at least stall the action, make it go late in the shot clock, and still deny an open look from three. So the way you combat that typically, you shot fake, you drive in, you get the defense on its heels with essentially their scramble mode to try and close out on that three. And so what you need to combat that is guys that are comfortable putting it on the floor, driving past them, moving the ball, basically taking advantage of a defense that's out of position. And the Rockets, after James Harden, just have not had enough secondary creators to do that. That's one of the things that's really interesting about these Rockets. I know on paper, it's one of the better offenses in NBA history. But in reality, they're still sort of limited, especially once it gets to the postseason and the way a lot of teams, typically well-coached ones like Billy Donovan and Greg Popovich teams, tend to do. Because for all the options the Rockets have, they are mostly shooters. Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, these are shooters, and that's gotten a lot better. Over the balance of 82 games, that's going to do a lot. But in the playoffs, sometimes it just comes down to creating off the dribble because the athletes are so good, there's no back-to-backs, everyone is locked in defensively, there's a level of energy that's not all there in the regular season. And in the regular season, yeah, you can have Harden be the distributor and you can take advantage of the grind, so to speak. Guys aren't going to be committed, and over the course of a game, you're going to get your shots. Over a playoff series, maybe if you create some from multiple sources, then you can eventually get those shots. But when you have an offense that's very predictable, which is what I would say the Rockets are right now in terms of the burden on Harden as a playmaker, that can catch up with you. Now, does it have to be that way? No, we have seen these playoffs from Lou Williams, Eric Gordon games where they have been very, very effective, not just at shooting, but at creating, doing the very things we've discussed. Even Pat Beverley in a couple of games has done it. But that's something that they have got to do in a hurry in this series, because without it, the offense is just far too predictable. We've seen the adjustments that Greg Popovich has made, and while there are some things that Mike D'Antoni can do to combat it, I think big picture, they need a secondary creator, a consistent one, to step up. And maybe the Rockets find that on Sunday, and if they do, they're still fully capable of winning this series. All you got to do is take one Game 5 or Game 7 in San Antonio, not both. It's not at all crazy for that to happen. So no, I'm not writing them off. I believe in their potential to win the series a lot, but ultimately that's going to be the downfall. When you look at a system like this, it's not really that difficult than how the Golden State Warriors win at a championship level. Folks have pointed that out. But the difference is that Golden State in prior years, it's not just Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, those guys produce at a borderline all-star level. Now you have Kevin Durant as well. The talent up and down the roster is just so much. They are not 100% dependent on Stephen Curry as a playmaker. There are other things they can do to generate their offense besides just shoot threes. The Rockets, they have a lot of shooters. In terms of the creators, they have some guys that are capable of that, especially Lou and Eric. Those are the two guys that jump to mind, but they're not necessarily consistent enough, and I think if it's not this series, certainly against the Warriors, that's kind of the fly in the ointment. That's what's ultimately going to catch up with them, and that's why long-term, to truly be a championship team, this is something I've said before, can you win with this system? Yes, you can, but you probably need a second all-star level player besides James Harden, because in today's NBA, it's just so easy when your offense can be dependent on one playmaker the way the Rockets seem to be right now. The flip side is the Spurs. They were without Tony Parker in Game 3, but Kawhi Leonard, he was pretty good. 26 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. You always expect that with Kawhi, 9 of 20 from the field. But the difference, LaMarcus Aldridge was 12 of 20, and that kind of goes back to who's the third best player in the series. You have Harden and Leonard canceling each other out, but after that, Aldridge on paper is by far the best. He showed up, especially offensively, on Friday evening, and so that's the kind of secondary creator that the Rockets just don't have. And in a way, that was sort of the difference in the game, is that, yeah, both Harden and Leonard were great. Harden in particular was brilliant, but the Spurs had a secondary player that was capable of stepping up in a manner that no one on the Rockets roster really did. So I think that goes to show you that presence of a second all-star level player can go a long way, especially in playoff settings like this. It's funny to me, a lot of folks will break down Mike D'Antoni teams against one another because he's such a unique style. I get the tendency to do that. And we've heard a lot of comparisons about his mid-2000 Suns teams to these Rockets. And in some respects, these Rockets have certain advantages. Certainly Harden's more of a scorer than Steve Nash was. He's capable of taking over a game with 40-plus points the way he did Friday in a manner that Steve Nash just couldn't do that often. I would say the Rockets also generally have a little bit grittier defense, the likes of Pat Beverly, Trevor Ariza. But one advantage those Suns teams had, especially in the playoffs on offense, was there's a pretty long list of creators and consistent ones at that. Yes, Steve Nash and James Harden, those are the lead guys. But Amari Stoudemire is the number two. There is no one nearly as consistent as a pre-microfracture Amari when it comes to not just scoring, but generating his own offense on the low block. Sean Marion was pretty good in his prime as a creator. Back in 2005, that was probably the best Phoenix team. I think that was when they were the one seed. They had Joe Johnson, who was a legitimate all-star level player in his prime. All of those guys are better and more consistent than Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Lou Williams, whoever you want to throw out there as the Rockets' legitimate number two option. The Rockets are doing a good job of surrounding James Harden with shooters, and that has helped a lot, especially over the balance of an 82-game season, but they also need to surround him with playmakers. You have that a little bit in terms of Lou Williams and Eric Gordon off the bench. Certainly it's better than what the Rockets had last year, and so that's a big step forward. But when it comes to actually being a contender, I think you would like a more consistent secondary creator than those two. They can do it in certain circumstances, but over the course of long playoff series against really good opponents, it's a personnel issue that the Rockets are going to have to rectify. That said, they're not going to have a chance to do that until July, and I know a lot of you guys want to win this series, which, by the way, the Rockets still certainly can. The team is still in there that won by 27 points in Game 1. So let's spin it forward. What adjustments can the Rockets make over these final four? Because I don't want to sound like this series is over. I don't think it is. I think the Rockets are fully capable of winning this series. I'm just talking a little pessimistically about the roster construction, because whether it's this series or the next one, I think we're seeing the symptoms, the things that are ultimately going to cause the Rockets to come up short in their pursuit of an NBA championship this year. But in terms of adjustments they can make this series, one thing that's definitely causing the Rockets a lot of problems is the Spurs playing Powell and LaMarcus together. That was the adjustment that Greg Popovich made after Game 1, and he did it again after doing it first in Game 2 with success, had even more success Game 3. Powell played 31 minutes, LaMarcus had 38. They had 6 blocks combined, 16 rebounds. Their length is a big, big factor in the Rockets not really getting the shots that they want to get inside. By the way, don't buy any of the post-game quotes about them getting comfortable them being comfortable with the level of looks. I don't think they are. Yeah, the Rockets missed a few uncontested looks. I saw someone point out that Gordon, Anderson, and Nene were a combined 3 of 13 in uncontested shots. Yeah, that's a subpar night, and certainly the Rockets missed some shots they could have made. But by and large, the problem is the volume. They didn't have that many uncontested looks. And I think regardless of what they say publicly, the Rockets are aware that their offense is not generating the looks that they have become accustomed to. It's just, you're never going to say that. You're never going to reveal weakness in a post-game media session. You're going to act like it's all within your control and you just didn't execute. That's the laws of sports media. That's just how it works. When you're in a best-of-seven series, you're never going to give your opponent a psychological advantage of knowing that, well, what they're doing is working. You're going to act like it's all within your control. You're not executing it, and now you've got to go out and shoot better. Make it sound as simple as you can. I don't really buy the explanations because I don't think the Rockets are going to be candid with us as media in terms of what they really think. That's just coach speak, player speak. The Rockets know there's a problem, and I would say it starts with those interior guys. So how do you combat it? Well, first things first, you need Ryan Anderson to make shots. He started 7 of 7 in Game 2. He was 0 of 4, scored just 2 points in Game 3. The home Ryan versus road Ryan splits, I know we joke about it a lot, but they're very real, and it cost the Rockets again on Friday. The other thing that you have to look at, and it's a delicate balance, Clint Capella was a big positive for the Rockets again, 16 points, 5 blocks in his 32 minutes. But at the same time, his presence on the floor kind of allows the Spurs to sag back. One thing that I would be curious to experiment with, I saw this from Nate Duncan after the game, put Ryan Anderson at the center spot and just see what happens. Does that pull Pau Gasol away from the basket? Because the flip side, you have both Anderson and a power forward who can shoot from three. That has the potential to really pull Pau and LaMarcus out. Now, does that give away too much on the glass? Maybe, but you won't know until you try it. Other thing is, well, if you do that, if you play Ryan some at center, what's going to happen in the power forward minutes? Because certainly Trevor Ariza, hell, Trevor played 46 minutes. He barely took a break on Friday night, and that may not be sustainable. So where do you go for those minutes? Well, Sam Decker's another option. I know he was fully cleared before game one. D'Antoni said that, well, he was a little rusty, so he didn't want to play him, although Decker did come in, make a three in that game one blowout. I would have to think long and hard about playing Sam Decker. He's had over a week to be back with the team, practicing. At this point, he is an athlete. He gave the Spurs some problems this year. When you look back at the four games these teams played, he played a key role in a lot of them. And so maybe if you play both Decker and Anderson up front, those are long athletes. And so whatever you lose rebounding, taking Clint Capella or Nene off the floor, I think especially you can gain some minutes taking Nene off the floor. As good of a matchup as the Thunder were for Nene, I don't think this series is nearly as good for Nene from a matchup standpoint. So maybe that's when off the bench you make Ryan Anderson your quasi backup center, and then you put in Sam Decker to absorb 10 or so of those minutes at the backup four spot. That's something I'd like to see, because if there's something the Rockets have to do to get the Spurs out of this kind of stall ball that they're in, they need to make more athletic plays. The Spurs right now are very traditional. LaMarcus, Powell, they have slowed it to a crawl. They are playing what you would consider very traditional NBA defense in terms of their rim protection this series, their length. And right now, it's working. So how do the Rockets beat that? Well, they need to get out and transition more. That's where having more athletes helps. And, well, they literally need to pull some of those guys further away from the basket to give more driving lanes. Obviously, it would help for Harden, but the bigger factor is that if you take a Gasol or LaMarcus away from the basket, maybe that makes it easier for those inconsistent secondary creators, the guys we talked about that are the ultimate variables for the Rockets, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, the ones we were discussing with regards to the first round versus the second round and the differences in the series. Because for Lou, who was basically a non-factor in Game 3 and was a non-factor in Game 2 as well, Lou actually went scoreless in Game 3, I think some of that length inside is causing him problems. So maybe one adjustment you make, yeah, Ryan at the center spot, Decker at the four, that gives you more athleticism, that gives you more spacing. It comes at a cost in terms of rebounding, but, well, Fulks Nene had one rebound in Game 2 and three in Game 3. It's not exactly like Nene's four rebounds in the last two games combined are giving you that much of a presence already as it is. So maybe that's something you experiment with. I don't see what you have to lose. The other thing, as I said earlier very briefly, start your action earlier in the shot clock. I think part of what happens, there's a little bit of uncertainty because the Rockets are not used to playing a team with this sort of length inside at both the four and five spots. There's a little bit of tentativeness on the reads from everyone, James Harden included. And so sometimes when they initiate the action and they kick it back out, and for whatever reason, either the shot isn't there or they're not really comfortable shot faking and trying to drive inside with whoever gets the ball out on the perimeter. When that happens, a lot of it's because the Rockets have burned 8 or 9 seconds kind of walking the ball up the court with that slow pace and trying to read the defense. There's not really enough time to create secondary action. It just gets back to Harden or whoever it is with 3 or 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and all of a sudden they've just got to heave something up because the clock is working against them. So, yeah, Decker and Anderson, that at the 4 and 5 spots, that's one adjustment. The other thing I would think of, initiate your action earlier. In terms of pace, it's easy to say, well, you got to run them more and harder to do, because certainly, first off, you need to get stops. One thing the Spurs did better than the Rockets, we haven't talked that much about the Spurs because I think a lot of the problems have been the limitations of the Rockets right now. The Spurs made some really tough shots in the fourth quarter, especially from three. Kawhi was 2 of 3. Danny Green was 3 of 5. Patty Mills was just 2 of 10, but he had a big one. Thought the three at the end of the buzzer, at the end of the third quarter at the buzzer from Jonathan Simmons was enormous, pushing it back from 3 to 6 at the end of the third quarter in a slugfest like this. I thought that game was huge for momentum. That moment was huge for momentum's sake. And it just seemed like the Spurs, when it really mattered, they made some big shots. You tip your hat to them. But what that means for the pace, of course, is that, well, it's tough to run when you're taking the ball out of bounds because it just went through the basket. So it's one of those things, yeah, it's easy to say, well, you just got to push the pace, push harder. That in and of itself is not always going to solve the pace, especially if the other team is making shots. However, even if it doesn't necessarily help the pace that much, if the Rockets push it up the floor quicker, it's not necessarily going to help the pace of the game because the Spurs are already back, but if it lets them initiate the offense a few seconds earlier in the shot clock, then that can go a long way towards getting a good look, even if you're not able to get a quality shot from the first action. That's one thing that I want to keep hitting home. That's one adjustment. I think sometimes if the Rockets aren't literally getting fast breaks, they tend to be content with just essentially playing in the half court and seeing what James Harden can read and get going. And in this series, based on the overall length of the Spurs, the coaching of Popovich, that's not really good enough. Even if the fast break isn't there, there's still value towards getting down there faster and trying to make, or I shouldn't say make multiple reads, it's give yourself multiple opportunities to do something against the Spurs defense. It's obviously very comfortable. Again, just the first time all year that the Rockets have been held below 100 points in consecutive games. And then the final key that I would throw out as far as adjustments, and it's not so much an adjustment as it is stating the obvious, make shots. Look, we talked a lot about what the Spurs need to do, what the Rockets need to do, to combat the evolving Spurs defense over this series. And certainly there are a lot of instances where the Rockets need to make some tactical adjustments led by Mike D'Antoni to generate offense. But beyond that, they're just not making enough threes. Pat Beverly, 1 of 5. Ryan Anderson, 0 of 4. Trevor Ariza hit 5 threes, but he did not have any in the second half. Eric Gordon was 1 of 4. Lou Williams, 0 of 1. Bottom line, the Rockets, what few threes they did get, they did not hit them at nearly high enough of a percentage. They did in Game 1. It hasn't been in Game 2 or Game 3, and that's coming off the heels of a first-round series against the Thunder in which they shot just 28% overall. So the bottom line is, the Rockets, we know that they don't really have a consistent secondary creator. That's one theme I wanted to lead this podcast with. But the reality is that in the absence of a secondary creator, you really, really need to make your shots to kind of overcome that limitation. And the Rockets right now aren't doing that either. And so when you combine all that together, what you get is kind of a slugfest, especially against a really veteran, well-coached team like the Spurs. And the adjustments, well, like I said, you start with tactical, but beyond the tactical stuff, you just need to make jumpers. You need to make more shots. The Rockets haven't done it at nearly a high enough clip the last two games, and, well, that's why they've lost. And unfortunately, it's been a theme of the Rockets, as I said, not just these playoffs, but going back all the way to January. It's been since December that the Rockets were truly an elite three-point shooting team. We saw the fall-off in January, February, March, and April. There were moments in which you would see flash of the old Rockets, but they did not do it on a consistent enough basis. They were just terrible, 28% in the first round. And in this series, started well in Game 1, franchise record 22 threes, but Game 2 and Game 3, nowhere close. And certainly some of that is the Spurs' adjustments and things that Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets need to do in terms of moves on the chessboard to adjust back, but some of it is just missing open shots, and we can theorize on the reasons for a while. Maybe it's adjustments around the league. Maybe there's a little bit of a physical toll after taking such a high volume of threes. Maybe there's a wearing down effect. Maybe there's some injuries we don't know about. We can throw out theories for days, but the reality is that, well, they're just not making enough shots for whatever reason. They didn't in the first round, and they're also not doing it in the second round right now. And to go forward, certainly they need to generate more offense, and I'm sure they're going to work on ways to get more shots within the flow of the offense. But the bottom line is, some of those shots they got last night were decent looks, and they just didn't make them. And to get where they want to go, well, you've just got to make shots. I know it's boring to say, but, well, that's the way the NBA goes, and that's as big a factor as any when it comes to what the Rockets haven't done the last few games and how they can dig out starting with Sunday's Game 4. And, well, I'll wrap the podcast there because, really, I think we've covered all the angles. You've just got to put the ball in the basket more often. And, well, Game 4, it's got to be one where you pull out all the stops because, as I said leading off, if you go down 3-1 with Game 5 and Game 7 in San Antonio, folks, I truly believe it would be over. I don't see the Rockets having a chance without home court to come back from a 3-1 deficit. I think Sunday you've got to throw the kitchen sink at those guys. And if you do, 2-2, best of three series, even with two of the three in San Antonio, I think the Rockets would have a decent shot. I think on paper, they have more playmakers than the Spurs do. Now, the Spurs is presenting a challenge because LaMarcus Aldridge stepping up. They have the most consistent secondary option, and in certain games, that's becoming a factor. But the Rockets have a lot of guys, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon. At some point, the law of averages should kick in. They should have some highlights. And when that happens, if it's a best of three series, I think the Rockets do have a chance, despite what we've seen the last two nights. But to get there, obviously, they've got to take care of business in Sunday's Game 4. That's tomorrow night. And if they don't do that, well, my sense is that it could definitely end in five games on Tuesday night in San Antonio. So until then, hope you guys go out and enjoy your weekend. Like I said, not all hope is lost for the Rockets. They go out and win tomorrow. It's 2-2. And at that point, it's a best of three. So concern signs, definitely. Some things that you would worry about. But at this point, 2-1 is not the end of the world. The odds were always likely that you were going to have to win another game in San Antonio at some point. And until the Rockets lose Game 4, it's all right there in front of them on the table. There's a very reasonable path for them to win this series. So I would not worry too much. Go out and enjoy your Saturday. And then hopefully everybody from the fans on down to the players comes committed Sunday because, well, that's going to be a game in which the Rockets are playing for their season. So whatever happens, of course, I'll have you covered right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Follow me, your host, Ben DuBose, on Twitter at Ben DuBose. Also, email the show, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan. Once again, unhappy final from Toyota Center Friday night. Spurs 103, Rockets 92. Spurs now lead 2-1 in the best of seven series. Game 4, pretty much a do or die for the Rockets, it feels like, will be Sunday night, 8 p.m. tip at Toyota Center. Telecast goes back to TNT. Hopefully that's when the Rockets start to turn this thing around with some of the ideas that we've discussed on this very podcast over the past 30 minutes or so. But no matter what happens, I'll be with you on Twitter and, of course, right here on Locked On Rockets following the game to break it all down. For now, go out and enjoy your weekend and hope to see some of you guys on Sunday at Toyota Center.